Hey, party people. It is Wednesday at 5:50 p.m. on August the 25th. And today was the day that all of the returning teachers came to campus. And like any other campus, it changes the whole vibe of the campus because you really get to get a feel for how close or how distant people that are on the campus are. And it reminded me a lot of when I was at Harmony, because there were a lot of Turkish and Arabic speaking people there. And they're very, once again, people are just very cliquish is not a right term. I think cliquish is something more that I would use in an American term. For me here, it seems like it's cliquish, but it's also kind of draped in the security of being around people who are safe for you and your culture. So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's mostly women. So I'm starting to get the sense that, like, you know, here the men are kind of like in the sciences, the maths, the computer. And we have the one guy in English language arts, but everything else is women. All the other departments, all the other classes are women. So there's this role idea that I see that I wasn't really seeing in the States. So they all came back today, and it's, you know, it gets a little electric because you are watching people who know each other, and they're hugging each other, and they're happy to see each other, and they're just in their little circles, and they're just doing their talk. And, you know, then there's us, the newbies, and those of us who speak English, who are just kind of on the outskirts trying to make eye contact with some, you know. But for the most part, from my perspective, I am observing, and I'm minding my own business, so to speak. And I'm, you know, getting ready to go to this first workshop. So what I like about this school is they really do have a holistic approach. And by that, I mean, today we did like an entire, maybe like 2-hour workshop strictly on emotional intelligence. Strictly over emotional intelligence and what it means to manage your emotional intelligence, what it means to apply your emotional intelligence, and what it means to be emotionally intelligent in front of young people. And I thought, this is dynamic. This is great. You know, it's something that I've always kind of wanted. It's something that I was sort of a part of with Journeyman Inc. when we were doing Diverse Lounge in the classrooms. It allowed us to bring emotional literacy into the classrooms, which made it a safe environment for people to express themselves, but it was done after school. So to bring this kind of holistic philosophy to the teacher, to bring it into the classroom, I just think it's phenomenal. I think it's needed, and I think it's necessary. Now, the workshop started out, it was just a lot of talking at first. So I started doodling, because that's what I do. If you don't want me to go to sleep and I can't go to the back of the room and stand up, I'll just start doodling. So I'm listening. And I will say this, I did have an issue in the end because the director is not a psychologist at all, and he had us doing some pretty heavy stuff. However, I'll tell you what some of those things were. So the first thing we had to do was make a list of what our day looks like. Like, what does our day look like right now? What, you know, what do we do in that day? And we had to write the reason why. So I'm gonna tell you what I wrote. This is my day right now. I wake up and first thing I do is thank God. And I do that to align myself for guidance and protection in the spiritual realm. And I drink water, which breaks my fast, right? My overnight fast from sleeping. That's a cellular activation. Then I journal for stability, focus, and to write. Because as an educator, I don't always get to write during the evenings or during the day. And right now, because school is getting ready to start, it's limited, you know, which is good because I got a lot of projects. So sometimes I can edit and still feel like I got something accomplished. Then I meditate 3 to 5 minutes, so to center myself, recenter. Then I put on some music for cellular enjoyment. That's for my body. I dance every day. Then I get dressed because I got to prepare. I cannot go into a school in my pajamas. It's just not going to work. Then I go to work, and I realize that I don't work for money. Money has never been something that was important to me in the way that people put emphasis on it. So what I wrote down was that I work to contribute to society, to give to society. Working is necessary, so I don't have to do it for money. Then I made lunch, and that's to replace the burned energy from working. And then I go back to work and continue to contribute to society. And then I go home, which is a return from where I came. And it's my recharging station. So when I get home, you know, I feel different because I'm ready to do something different. Then I put on my play clothes. Change is good. I exercise if I can. Now, I used to exercise in the morning before I got here, so everything has kind of flipped. And I exercise to allow my body to have a moment. Then I recap work prep because it's a smart thing to do, and that's one of my objectives while I'm here. So after I exercise and come in, then I may do a little bit more. Let me see what I got to do tomorrow. Look at my lesson plan, talk to my roommate about lesson planning. And then I eat dinner, because if I eat before I listen plan, it's not gonna happen because I'll get sleepy. And then I take care of my personal business, and that's to connect with who I am as well as my family and my friends. And then I begin to close the day out, and I either read to go to sleep or I listen to a podcast to go to sleep. So last night I listened to Karen Hunter before I went to bed. The night before that, I was reading The Man Who Lived Underground. So that's pretty much my day. And that's how I operate. So that was pretty cool. You know, we had to share out with our neighbor on that one. And then the next exercise was to write down 3 of our strengths and 3 of our weaknesses as a teacher. So mine was that I have energy. My good parts is that I have energy. I'm a good decision maker, and I'm good at being myself. Like I think I'm built and designed not to really join things. And once I've joined something, I immediately realize I probably shouldn't have joined it. So it's just really easy for me to operate solo dolo. 3 of my bad traits are I have authority issues. I hate doing what people tell me to do. I hate that. I hate when somebody's like, maybe you should do this. It's something about it. And it's not like the physical me. It's the like my gut. It's like, where did you come from? Why are you telling me what to do? My social anxiety, which I'm dealing with. And I tend to be a procrastinator, but I'm here to like get rid of all of that. I'm literally here to get rid of all of that. So that was cool. That was a real moment for me and an awakening. And then we had to write down 3 people who have had the biggest impact on our lives. And it was really easy for me. My great uncle Joe, who was my grandfather's brother, he used to always tell me I had a pretty smile. I wouldn't smile when I was little, but it's because there was trauma involved with who I was. You know, I've told y'all that, like, I just grew up with them dark, with thinking I was a dark, like, thinking I was black. And it was because people made issues out of my skin color. My own grandfather, my maternal grandfather, used to say I changed colors. He'd be like, you this color in the fall, you this color in the winter, and in the summer you this color, and in the spring you this color. And he had names. You chestnut. And he was just a weird way of acknowledging that I existed. And it didn't feel, even though I really do believe my grandfather said, I can still hear him saying it with that cigarette dangling from his mouth. I don't think he intentionally meant to hurt me. I really don't. He didn't know how to really love through words, right? He wasn't an emotional man. He worked, and, you know, I sometimes feel like a lot of times people don't realize when you have sex, that's where kids come from. So, you know, a lot of times people are just working, and babies are coming, and it's all just kind of crazy. So you never really have the time to connect with yourself and realize that you are an emotional creature. There is more emotions in the world other than anger, right? So, yeah. So anyway, my great uncle Joe used to always tell me to smile, and he was consistent with that, and he supported everything that I did. You know, when I told him I liked to write, he supported that. When my mother put me in a calligraphy class one year in middle school. I was going to Cedar Valley one summer taking a computer class and a calligraphy class. And when I got out of the calligraphy class, I was making like Christmas cards, and my uncle Joe bought my Christmas cards that year. And he was just a positive person for me. When I grew dreadlocks, when I started growing my locks, he came up one year, and I promise you, I remember him looking at me. He was like, he didn't understand it, but he didn't deny me the right to do it. I did have family members that were just like, I don't like, you know, my family, they really are straightforward, and they'll tell you if they don't like some or not. Not that you ask them, so you got to check them sometimes, but my Uncle Joe was always it was something that he saw in me that he answered to the call of me needing to be reinforced. He loved me in a way that reinforced who I was. And I was an adult before I really processed and was able to comprehend what he did for me overall. You know, he put it out there way, way, way before I ever met it, right? And then my teacher, Miss Jacqueline Jones Harvey, who taught me in talented and gifted in 3rd, 5th, and 6th grade, opened my whole world up, gave me a confidence going into middle school that I wouldn't have had otherwise, saw my talents, tried to help me advance my talents, but I was hard-headed as a kid. And to this day, we're friends, and her memoir is right now being published, and I edited her memoir, and I'm right now writing the movie script for her memoir. So it's really, that relationship is like the foundation for the person that y'all are kind of talking to now, or that y'all are listening to now. And then the third biggest influence of my life is my mother. My mother brought to my world the idea of contrast. I always romanticized everything, and my mother brought to me the idea that you can be in a mother-daughter relationship that is not based in mother-daughter partnership, right? So we're like water and oil, but we get along. And it made me understand that relationships do not have to be in balance in the way that the world thinks it should be in balance, you know. And my mother gives me the right to express myself. She gives me the right to say the things that I want to say. Now, if I get out of hand, she will check me. And I appreciate that from her. But she also really, it's something about how she just kind of likes listening to me go off. She likes my opinion. You know, my mother will call me and ask me for advice. And she gave me perspective that people hug differently, that people love differently, and that you have to be able to really identify with difference. And she's the only person who's ever brought that to my table in the way that I needed to learn it. So I really appreciate her for that. Now, where this stuff starts getting really weird is our director then tells us, now mind you, some people started crying because that whole, like, now you're like evoking memory. And you not, he ain't prepared. He ain't prepared. So what happens is after we do that one, he's like, he notices some people are kind of like visually upset. And then he tells everybody, well, if you need to leave the room. And I'm like, that's not how you do this. That's not how you do this, especially with, you know, women who already are dealing with certain levels of oppression. And, you know, you don't know why they're, you know, these memories are, you don't know what you're unearthing when you tell people to unearth memory. Okay, so now we're in this really like strange land where I'm like, oh my goodness, this dude here. So then he says, everybody, now what you're gonna do is you're gonna write your obituary. Well, me and Shari were sitting there looking at each other, and I was like, yeah, I'm not finna do that. I was like, I'm too far from home to be playing around with an obituary. Like, no sir. No way. But everybody is like complying. You know, everybody wants to please and everybody wants to not be disagreeable. So, you know, I didn't pretend. I just started doodling again, which looked like I was maybe writing my obituary. And Shari just put her shit down altogether. She had had enough. She was like, I'm not bloody doing it. So, but all I wrote was, Kamika was living her best life. Google her. So that was that, and after that, we had a little break, and I got to meet Jasmine, and because I had told, who was it? Oh, Radia. I think her name is Raja. It's either Radia or Rama. Anyway, there's another teacher here in the English Language Arts Department who does yoga, and she lives in our building. And I was telling her, I was like, hey, can, you know, we do some yoga classes? Well, she's taking it a step further, and her and Jasmine are about to offer it to the teachers at the school and see if we can kind of put a teacher's yoga class together. And if they can't, you know, then she was like, yeah, sure, we can just go up on the roof, do some yoga, because I need it in my life right now. They feeding us all kinds of stuff, and they're when I first got here, I was kind of at the mercy on certain levels. So now that I'm kind of getting back to eating my fruits and vegetables and finding fruits and vegetables that I can eat, I'll be okay. But for a little while, I was like, let me eat this bread, you know, let me eat these potatoes, let me eat this meat. So that was that. That was pretty much the day. We did group exercises, and let me tell you the kind of people I work with. I was in this group today, y'all. And while everybody's figuring out what groups they need to be in, I went to go use the bathroom. When I come back, they done assigned me as the presenter. And at first I thought they were playing. And they was like, no, we're gonna do the board, because we had to do a chart for the difference between an effective teacher and an efficient teacher. Like, you know, it's okay to be efficient as long as you're effective, kind of thing. These jokers done made me the presenter, but it was no problem, because what I am now is totally, 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 I don't resist much. If my body, if my cellular self doesn't respond to something, I don't resist it. You know, they were like, you're reading, you're going to present. I was like, all right, but y'all wrong for that. Don't y'all know anything about permission? No, they don't. Not around here. The men are constantly interrupting the women. They are constantly talking over the women. The women constantly talking over each other. It is it's something else to watch. It is really something else to watch. I just didn't grow up like that. You know, I just didn't. Men didn't talk over women. You know, women are cornerstones. They're goddesses. They, you know, if a woman is talking, you shut up. You listen. Anyway, so that was that. We got to be in the gym for the first time, and our gym floor is green. It's painted green. It's not really it's not the size of a standard gym floor. As a matter of fact, we don't even have risers. There are like benches, and it's not that many, so I don't know if they have like pull-in risers or not, but I didn't see a place for like conceptual competition with an audience. And the basketball goals are not on each end of the court in the way that I'm used to. They're on those flat sides of the court where you would normally have your audience sitting, your spectators. But all around the walls are these cloth banners where I can see that girls volleyball has been a successful endeavor, girls basketball, kids 10 years old and younger, football, swimming, the boys basketball, boys football. They have a lot of banners. So I'm at a place where the kids do, they are accomplished and they do compete. And I'm excited to see that. The pool is upstairs. The infants pool is upstairs. Yeah, I'm telling y'all, these infants, man, they graduating with a 401k. They have to be. So it was just another kind of impressive thing about the school. But it's impressive and then it's oppressive because, dude, the seats are wooden and they are not cushioned. And even in the classrooms, the seats are these old wooden, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's, you know, there are moments where things are very, very archaic, very like, what are we doing here? Like, remember I told y'all when I had to go get my books, we had to fill out a piece of paper. Everything is on paper. Nothing is literally being input into the computer outside of your registration in terms of making sure your passport is on, you know, that kind of stuff. But everything else is we filling out paper, and I'm like, why are y'all still doing this? Why are we doing this? So there are moments where things are, and then we got our tablets. So, you know, there's times where we're future forward, and then there are times where we are just like stuck, literally stuck in 1972. And it comes and goes. It just comes and goes. They were painting on the campus today. They're doing a lot of stuff, which feels to me like last minute, because technically school would have started this next coming week. And this stuff happening that I'm just kind of like, y'all should have did that. Y'all should have been done on that. As a matter of fact, me and Shari stepped in some paint today because they painting. They trying to get the school ready. And I'm just was like, this should have been this. Y'all should have done this already. What else can I tell y'all about this school system? Right at this particular point, I'm kind of just ready for the kids to come. We're still preparing. Shari and I have to do a bulletin board, but we don't know when we're going to get the time to do it because things just change. Things keep changing. I'm at a place where you have a schedule, but you can't don't prepare for anything. Flexibility is the name of the game at this place. It's the name of the game. Oh, let me go back to this emotional intelligence thing. One of the things that came up was that the director basically said he was against multitasking. He said if he could have it his way, he would go back thousands of years to when his ancestors were living with no electricity. They were hunting for their food, you know, didn't have to go shop. It was, y'all, it was some of the craziest stuff I heard. Because first of all, when he said, I would go back to when my ancestors, I was like, you already in violation, bro. You already in violation talking about going back. Why can't you future forward yourself into a situation like that? Because that's kind of where we're headed. Speaking of which, since I've been here, there have been 3 blackouts. One of the blackouts included no water. So now all of a sudden I'm in like Nigeria, right? Anyway, I got to get used to it though. I got to get used to it. It's actually kind of a third world, you know, when it happens. You know, most of the time I'm sitting right here like I am now and then everything just powers down. And I'll look around like, oh, that's what that is. So, yeah, he's talking about he doesn't believe in multitasking. So one of my coworkers was sitting next to me like, I can see what he's saying. I said, no, you don't. Because she's a woman. I said, let me tell you something. The only people who can say stuff like that are men. Men from here, probably. Because a woman can't help but multitask. We carry the weight. We literally carry the weight of bringing life into this world. So there's no way a woman can even fit her mouth to say multitasking is a bad thing. Now, it can be, but on the whole, no. Then I turned and looked at Shari and said, he's setting us up to fail. Because the first thing, these people, I'm telling y'all, is hurry up and wait. And they always want you to be doing what they want you to do when they want you to do it. There are no questions. Like, I'm already set for somebody to yell at me. And I just be standing there, playing with my hair or something. Like, I hear you, but I don't hear you. Because I can already see it. I can already see it. The demands, a bad decision. And these people make demands. So my director standing up there talking about he want to be a caveman and he doesn't believe in multitasking. And he even went as far to say that, you know, he doesn't like work. He likes what he does, but he doesn't like the idea of getting up every day and having to report in somewhere. To even say that for me was like X marks the spot. Because that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. A leader, a person in a leadership position say, that's not how you lead the troops. That's not how you motivate people. That's not how you get people on board. And he's literally bragging. So I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm thankful that I don't have like expectations, let alone a judgment on a lot of this until like after the fact, you know. But when they're saying it, I'm really trying to process, who are you? Why would you say that? What is making you say that? What is it? Why are you setting us up to fail? Because now you got us, now you done did this whole spiel on, you know, if you are watching TV and you love watching TV, why would you interrupt that by answering a phone call? And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, what if you on the phone? Because if I don't answer my phone call because I'm watching Pose and then I see you the next day, I know I'm going to hear it. Because that's what people do. That's what people, especially in education, people want to hold you accountable. And they will try to call you out. They will try to put you on Front Street. Yeah, I called you last night. You didn't answer your phone. Girl, if you don't hush, say, Joe, let's have that conversation later. Because what you don't want me to do is turn around and say, what about the multitasking? That's what I mean. People can be a little ridiculous when they comply with the rules under which they are employed. Or when they're complying with the rules they've created in order to have their business be minded by them. So I just thought that was crazy. Because I was like, he's not even taking into consideration that he's talking to 99.9% women. Or that all of them want you to move when they want you to move. And that's only going to get worse once the kids come. I can see it. I can see it. So that's pretty much where I am in this thing. I'm not unhappy. I don't feel like I'm in a bad place. I'm just in a really good position to learn. So one of the things that we also had to do was we had to think of an open-ended question. And we had to go around and ask two people. So the first... And it was really, at first I was like, because I'm just not social like that, y'all. This kind of stuff bothers me. But I just got up and did it. I walked through. I walked around and I could see people look at me and then dart their eyes away. But I was like, y'all, let's just get through this. So the first person I walked up to was Radia. Now, her name was Radia. Radia. It was Radia. And I walked up and asked her, what do you think about interior decorating? Here's where the alignment comes in. She was like, oh my God, I'm getting ready to move. And I like solids. And I may do a little print on the curtains, but I like clean. She was just going in because she's getting ready to move. So I hit the spot, you know, and we're having a conversation. And then she asked me, you know, how do I feel about pet adoptions? And I'm like, I dig pet adoptions. I like pets. I don't really like to own them because I get emotionally attached too fast. And it hurts to love like that. And, you know, all of that. Then Mina comes up and Mina gets in on the conversation. And so I meet Radia and Mina. And then the director says, now find somebody else. Now I'm like, I'm really literally about to go to my seat. So I'm going back to my seat because I'm not finna do it. I'm tired. I don't like, and they watching. Big Brother watches around here, y'all. They watch. You just never know who you're talking to. You got to be real careful. So I'm going back to my seat and I connect eyes with a guy who has the same look on his face that I have. Like, this is too much. And he has these huge sweat. pots. Under his arms, like the sweat is like, it's this huge circles. He's just like so uncomfortable. So he's standing behind my chair, but he's facing out. So I just walk up to his chair and I say, what do you think about, I can't even remember what I asked him. Oh, I said vacations. And he was like, I dig them, but I like to work. He's obviously young. I like to work. You know, he's like, after a while, being on vacation gets boring. And you just kind of want to go and be in purpose for something. And I was like, thumbs up, my brother. Thumbs up. He's not a brother at all. There are no, out of all the teachers there, yeah, I am the only African-American woman. And I'm a chocolate drop. I'm a chocolate drop. If you put us all together, I'm a chocolate drop. Okay. So he asked me, what did I think about acting? And I was like, dude, I ain't real big on acting, but I write scripts. And he loses it. He's like, oh my God, I write scripts too. As a matter of fact, dot, dot, dot. So tomorrow evening, I'm going to see a film being made. He's like, I got a friend, he's making a film right now, and we're all going to go over there and help him get it done. Would you like to come? And I was like, absolutely, absolutely. And he has scripts, he has content. So it was beautiful. It was beautiful to make that connection, to see a new door open. And I'm excited about that because I don't know where my tribe is, and if I don't open my mouth, I'll never find them. In that way when it comes to writing scripts and all of that. And I'm really excited because I'm in another country about to see a whole different level or way that it's done, even though I'm sure the foundations are the same, but to watch people work with what they have around these parts. So that's going to happen tomorrow if all goes well. And his name is Rami. And he's cool, you know. I can't remember what department he works in, but I think it's math. I think he's in the math department. So, yeah, that was pretty much my day. And afterwards, me and Shari, we walked back over to the little fruit stand because I needed to get some foil paper to heat up my food. And I also wanted to get some incense. So we walked back over there and we go into the store. I get the foil paper, get the incense, get up to the counter. The lady takes the foil paper from me. I don't know why. Shari goes and gets another thing of foil paper, thinking that maybe it's the box, because the box is barely hanging on to the foil. It's barely covering the foil paper. I don't know where they get this stuff from, but this store is like a... It's not a store in the way that your imagination is probably telling you it's a store. It's it's halfway put up. Like, the men here, they don't let the women help them, and they just go in somewhere and just throw stuff up on the shelves. So there is no order. A lot of stuff doesn't have prices on it. It's dusty. you know what I mean? It's like a warehouse, but it's not. It's a store. We go get the other foil paper. Basically, they haven't put it in the system yet. And because it's not in the system, I can't buy it. But this is the kind of store where the man could easily say, you know what? I'm going to sell this to you for £3, whatever. And he does it. So I don't get to heat up my food tonight in the oven. Well, I can. Shari has some aluminum like pans, but I need foil paper. I need to wrap it up. So once again, y'all, it's just one discovery after the next around here. We also went to the farmers, the little market that's right around the corner. And I bought 3 nectarines. 3. And they cost me 24 pounds. Which I was like, how? This shouldn't run me any more than 10 pounds. But that's how they get you. If you don't speak the language, and you're going to pay 24. It's basically like me paying $24 for 3 nectarines. That's how I look at it. Shouldn't have cost me no more than 10. And even 10 is a bit much, because in the States, I can get 3 nectarines for like maybe $2. A dollar, depending on where I go. So I'm constantly getting guided in those areas. But once again, it's only because I end up going to certain places with Shari and or Jinx. And they love going off that beaten path. And Shari, you know, she loves going in and talking and making friends and smiling and learning new words. And she's just, you know, she's like that. But I got her back. I got her back because, baby, there are moments where I'm like, we'd be on the same page about a whole lot of stuff, like a whole lot of stuff. And when she's, when her common sense kicks in, she's dope as fuck. That's just, I can't say it any other way. She's dope as fuck. So, that was my day today. Nothing out of the normal, outside of just watching people, kind of feel their way through orientating me. We got our tablets. We haven't been trained on them. We were supposed to be trained on them. They did the training, didn't have the tablets. That was the day the dude was like, I'm tired. I've done enough. I've said enough. I've stood in front of y'all enough. So right now we're good. Place smells good. Nobody has bug bites. We're coasting along. We sign our contracts next week. I signed a contract before I got here, but I think they go through and just make sure, because everything is paper, right? So they're just going through and making sure. So we're getting closer and closer to me being fully settled in here. And I also received a message regarding, I think it's called the IMK. That's not it. IKG. The IKG Asa Hilliard Project with Tony Browder. So I've sent him a email and I'm going to try to connect. I know that Brother Renoko Rashidi passed in Egypt not too long ago while doing a tour. And they're all back in the States right now laying him to rest. So I'm hoping that the year that I'm here that I do get to go see or observe or, you know, just make contact with Brother Browder to experience the excavation project. That's the kind of stuff that would make me, that would make it worth me being here even more. I know there are a lot of places, y'all are sending me so many places to go, but I'm just kind of like, I'm not, some of the stuff I'm just not interested in, you know, I want to live as much of a non-tourist life here as I can. I just don't, you know, everybody's like, well, did you go see this? Did you go see that? And I'm like, that doesn't really interest me. It doesn't make my sales jump, you know? But if I got to go see the excavation project, or if I got to hear Brother Browder come to Egypt and, you know, talk about the project, or just make connections with people who are helping document on the project, that would be dope. So with that being said, y'all, I'm about to probably take me a nap, which is probably going to turn into just sleep for the night, because today was actually a hot one. It was hot today. It was a little stiff. The air is still thinner here than it is in Texas, but we didn't have a breeze today and my ankles are tired. So with that being said, I'm gonna read a little bit and figure out my next move, but I gotta lay down and close my eyes for just a second. I hope y'all are doing well. Thank y'all for the comments. Thank y'all for supporting the podcast. I have monetized some of the episodes, but it's only 99 cents. So hopefully you won't mind paying that. You can reach me on any of my social networking. I am official_Kamika on Instagram and Kamika on Twitter and Emotion Brown on Facebook. I do vet people who want to get in, so please understand it might take a couple of days for me to click you in. At any rate, that is it. Thank y'all so much. I'm excited about what's to come, and we moving forward. So be good, be good, be good. Be God. Peace.